Composers have taken inspiration from everything that bears on the human condition, from oceans, mountains, and the rest of the natural world to the huge eternal themes of love, death, God, and war, a persisting part of life. That falls somewhere among those themes, too. Now, there are countless pieces of music inspired or provoked by war or written during war, music in praise of the nobility of a just war, music celebrating triumph, music grieving the agony and loss of war, asserting the absurdity of war, or praying for peace. We listened to a few last week, and this week Fred Child joins us with more. He's the host of NPR's Performance Today and is in our studios. Fred, thanks for being back with us.
Glad to be with you, Scott.
Let's start, if we can, in the Middle Ages with part of the Mass, L'Homme Armé.
Scott, this is a Mass that uses a familiar song. Back in the mid-1400s, everyone who heard this would have recognized right at the beginning of that this song called L'Homme Armé, the Armed Man. And even though this is a setting of a sacred text, listeners would have heard in this perhaps a call to arms. The text is, the man, the armed man. Fear the armed man. The call has gone out that everyone should arm themselves. Nobody knows exactly where this song comes from. It may go back to the Dukes of Burgundy and the Golden Fleece. It might go back to a call to arms for the Crusades. But wherever this song comes from, composers latched onto it about 1450, and for 200 years after that, dozens of composers integrated this song, this secular song about the armed man, into these sacred masses. Now, Scott, L'Homme Armé may be some of the earliest Western music that we know of in association with war. And as I said, it may have been a call to arms in the Crusades. But, of course, every war has two sides, so there's always music on both sides of the war. And what we're listening to now is a musical setting of an 11th century Arabic poem written by a Syrian prince. And this poem could not have been written without the Crusades. And there is kind of an oblique military reference here.
Yeah, I have the lyrics in front of us. They go, I am dazzled by a Frankish woman whose body exudes soft perfume. A sweet-smelling branch is slipped beneath her dress, and her cape is made of the silvery moon. Her eyes are as blue as the glinting steel of a lance.
Her eyes are not as blue as the sky. So this Syrian prince is writing a love poem to this French woman who presumably has arrived with the Crusades, and he admires her in almost military terms, in a sense.
Let me ask you about a slightly more recent French work. This is a piece from the 1500s and a piece celebrating a victory.
It is, and in fact, this was written by a man named Clement Jeannequin, and this is simply called The War. And he wrote this to celebrate a victory in 1515 over the Swiss. And never mind that the heroes of the battle were really the Venetians who rode in with the cavalry. This was a French composer, so he cast this as a great victory of the French king, Francis I. Scott, you could hear those voices, that boom, boom.
Yeah.
The onomatopoetic device of having the voices imitate the cannon shells. And this is a celebration of war, really. I mean, it makes war sound like not only a noble thing, but the most fun you could have on a Saturday morning. And there's another moment in this piece where you can sort of hear axes falling, voices saying, chop, 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 chop.
Of course, the 20th century, so recently passed, has often been called the bloodiest in human history. And war certainly appears in the music that was composed then. Let me ask you about this work. Written during World War II, perhaps one of the most recognizable pieces of music to Americans. And yet, I dare say a lot of us don't know that it was inspired by war.
Aaron Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man, written in 1942. America had just entered the war, and the Cincinnati Symphony decided to ask 18 American composers to write fanfares to open concerts of theirs for the entire season. Aaron Copland was one of those 18. Now, the other 17 fanfares are pretty much completely forgotten today. Pieces like the Fanfare for the Merchant Marine. This one is the one that's remembered. Copland said that he was after a certain nobility of tone, which to him suggested slow music rather than fast music. Fanfares are usually upbeat. You have the snare drums banging away and almost like a call to arms, like some of the earlier music. This is slow, and it has the kind of plain-spoken poetry to it in music that made Aaron Copland almost the poet laureate of American composers.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, too, you can hear in almost every musical phrase a sense of sacrifice. This is a very clear-eyed piece of music.
It is. And in fact, that's very much what Copland had in mind. It was that sense of sacrifice that he pointed to. In response to another fanfare, part of these same commissions written by Walter Piston, the Fanfare for the Fighting French, Aaron Copland said, "It seemed to me that if the Fighting French got a fanfare, so should the common man, since, after all, it was he who was doing the dirty work in the war."
You've brought along a piece that was created, in a sense, out of the cataclysm of Hiroshima. This is 1960's Threnody for the Victims of Hiroshima.
Scott, this is a piece that makes no attempt to answer the moral or military or strategic questions about whether or not the atom bomb should have been used. This is simply a 9-minute musical canvas painted with the audio equivalent of atomic destruction. There's no harmony, there's no rhythm. This is just a nightmare. This does, in a sense, go back to this tradition begun 500 years ago by one of the first pieces we heard, La Guerre by Clement Jeanneken, a musical depiction of a moment of battle. But this is completely different. This is not a celebration. This is not a light entertainment. Now, Scott, we're talking about music in time of war here, and I've brought some musical examples, but I think you have more direct experience with this in a way than I do. You were in Sarajevo in the early 1990s, and right after what came to be called the Breadline Massacre, there was some music in response to that.
During the siege of Sarajevo, there's actually a lot of music in response to that, but of course I think a lot of us remember a man we profiled, Vendan Smailovic, who was the principal cellist of the Sarajevo Symphony, who took his instrument and sat in a chair in a bar. I don't mind telling you. He was drinking our cognac, and we were singing songs, and it was dark because there, you know, no lights in the city, and the artillery was pounding outside the Serb guns that were focusing in on the city, and he played his cello, because he thought it was important for art to bear witness in the face of tragedy. Never had a more memorable night in my life, I expect.
You know, there's something about music in moments like this. Music in time of war has a kind of reaffirming humanity, I think. And this moment that you're talking about is a perfect illustration of that.
Fred, thanks so much.
Thank you, Scott.
Fred Child, the host of NPR's Performance Today. Weekend Edition Saturday is directed by Sarah Byer-Kelly and produced by Ed McNulty, Charlie Mayer, Darcy Bacon, Julia Bailey, Julia Holmes-Bailey, Bridget McCarthy, Diana Douglas, E.B. Stone, Andy Lyman, and Andy Danio. Our technical director, Burke Hunn, is so ably assisted today by Stacey Abbott, Ted Mebane, and Stu Rushfield. Our librarians are Kim Malesky, Holly Witt, and Dan Onstad. Our senior editor is Gwendolyn Tompkins, and the senior producer of Weekend Edition Saturday is Peter Breslow. I'm Scott Simon.